like what you see, hire him.
Oh, thank you. Wow. Okay, so I'd like to thank everyone for coming to my talk, and I'd also like to thank the organizers for inviting me, or inviting me to contribute, or whatever. The talk I'm going to give is actually kind of a general, bit of a survey talk, and I'm only going to touch on sort of computational issues and a bit of computation that actually involves me near the end. But I just want to sort of give an overview of this topic, because I think it's an interesting problem, which some people have certainly heard about, but it's not maybe so widely known. So I want to talk about periodic points for polynomials over number fields. And let's see if I succeed in using the two projector feature. So, I feel a little silly actually not giving a Beamer talk, because it's obviously a very computationally heavy audience and everyone's very good with computers, and I didn't get it together to make a Beamer presentation. Anyway, but here's my sort of low-tech slide. So I want to start by talking about a little bit of dynamics over the complex numbers, which is very sort of basic stuff that I'm sure a lot of people have seen before, but just to give a bit of a introduction and a lead-in to the actual problem that I want to talk about. So here's sort of the general, or a general question in dynamics over the complex numbers, sort of classical holomorphic dynamics. Given a morphism from P1 of C to P1 of C, describe the behavior of the morphism under iteration, whatever that means. Obviously, that's a very vague question, but just describe what happens if you take a point and start iterating your chosen map. You know, what happens to the point? So, of course, the way I set it up here, you could take look at any sort of morphism, but already this is non-trivial for quadratic polynomials. It's kind of trivial for polynomials of degree 1. I made the mistake once of saying in talk that it's also trivial for morphisms of degree 1. It's not trivial for morphisms of degree 1, but it's different. So the first kind of semi-generic but already non-trivial case is for quadratic polynomials. And I'm sure we've seen a lot of, you know, popular mathematic things about iterating quadratic polynomials, and you get these Julia sets and the Mandelbrot set, which is a set of all C such that something or other happens. So I'm sure we've already seen a lot of examples of problems related to the iteration of quadratic polynomials over C. But the coarsest initial distinction you could make, if you're given a point and you start iterating a function of that point, sort of most basic distinction you can make is whether the forward orbit of that point is finite or infinite, right? I can't think of anything coarser than that distinction. So we're going to give a name to points whose forward orbit is finite. Well, not quite, actually. We're going to give a name to something slightly more specific. So a point z is going to be called periodic for the function f if there's some n such that f composes itself n times at z is z, and the period is just the least such n, greater than 0, obviously. And so points where this forward orbit is finite are not necessarily periodic, but they end up at a point which is periodic. So the coarsest distinction that we can make is between periodic points and, or maybe pre-periodic points and periodic points, and non-periodic points, non-pre-periodic points. So I can't save the whole slide because they're too big, but I'll save the initial part of that slide. So this problem is not massively interesting over the complex numbers. Right, so if you take a quadratic polynomial z squared plus c over the complex numbers, they're pretty much periodic points of every period, just because the complex numbers are algebraically closed. And in just a few minutes, you can write down why they're points of every period. So asking, for example, which periods of points arise for quadratic polynomials of complex numbers is not a particularly interesting question. So what about over the rational numbers. So what if we restrict Q and C to be rational numbers? What can we say then about what periods arise for quadratic polynomials? And of course, this suddenly becomes a number theory problem, right? Because instead of looking at solutions for polynomial equations over the complex numbers, which is kind of boring, we're looking at solutions to polynomial equations over the rational numbers, which at least has a hope of being non-trivial. Okay, so before I talk any more about this, I want to talk about an analogous problem. And I put a question mark behind analogous because I'm going to draw an analogy, but it's maybe not at all clear that there's a very strong analogy. But I'm going to draw some sort of analogy and see if we can come up with what we should hope is true for quadratic polynomials. So here's a problem which I claim is vaguely analogous. We're going to look at a map. So we're going to take an elliptic curve over the rational numbers and look at a map from the elliptic curve to itself, which is just multiplication by 2. So an elliptic curve has the structure of an abelian group on it. In particular, over Q, the Q rational points are a finitely generated abelian group. And you can, in a group, you can multiply elements by 2. And this gives you a morphism from the elliptic curve to itself. And so you can look at iterating this and ask what sort of periods of points can come up over the rational numbers. Again, this particular problem, if you look over the complex numbers, is not that interesting. But over the rational numbers, it sort of has a hope of being non-trivial. So for those who are not familiar with the group operations on an elliptic curve, I have one very sort of lamely drawn picture which shows how this doubling map works. So an elliptic curve, if you don't know about elliptic curves, is just for our purposes a curve defined by an equation of the form y squared equals x cubed plus ax plus b, where a and b are integers. And so here's the graph of one such, the real locus of one such curve. And the doubling operation on an elliptic curve is given like this. When it starts with a point P, the curve has a tangent line at that point. And because it's a cubic curve, the tangent line should intersect the curve at exactly one other point. And then if we reflect that point for reasons that might be somewhat obscure, this gives a very nice, it gives 2P in the group. So this is the morphism that I'm talking about if you are not familiar with the theory of elliptic curves. Okay. Oh, I should freeze this. I think I promised to screw up on the third slide with the freezing. So. So here's the theorem that tells us a little bit about what happens for elliptic curves. So for those of you, of course, who know about elliptic curves, this is not exactly Mazur's theorem, but it's a consequence of Mazur's theorem. So Mazur proved a theorem in 77 describing, right, I mentioned that the group of rational points on elliptic curve is a finitely generated abelian group, so its torsion subgroup is finite. And Mazur proved a classification theorem classifying the different possible torsion subgroups. And a consequence of that theorem is this statement, that if a rational point on an elliptic curve is periodic for the multiplication by 2 map, then it has period at most 6. This isn't exactly equivalent to Mazur's theorem because it doesn't tell you anything about the 2 primary part of the torsion subgroup of an elliptic curve, but it tells you about the odd orders. So you can just write down the different possible odd orders of points on elliptic curves and see what it means for periodicity with respect to this function, and it turns out that you can only have points of period 1, 2, 3, 4, or 6. And this is very general, right? It doesn't depend at all on the elliptic curve. It's completely uniform across all elliptic curves over the rational numbers. So you might ask whether something similar is true for quadratic polynomials, right? Can you put some sort of upper bound on the period of any periodic point for any quadratic polynomial, given that both the point and the quadratic polynomial have coefficients in Q? Now, it's, of course, so I said that this is analogous, and I put a question mark beside it. There's a lot more going on here, right? This is not just any map from a curve to itself. It's doubling in a particular abelian group, right? If I tell you you have a map from a set to itself, and I ask you to prove something about it, it changes the story quite a lot when the map is doubling in a group. That's a very special type of map. So it's not clear that the analogy that I'm trying to draw here has any sort of substance to it. So how might one, if you have to keep changing colors, how might one approach this problem? Well, one thing that you could try to do is just write down the equations that parameterize the problem and try to look for rational points. So if you take a polynomial z squared plus c, or I'm going to leave c undetermined, and you write down fbn of z minus z, this is some polynomial in z and c, and it factors as a product for d dividing n of some polynomial in z and c. It's not hard to see that it factors in this way, because if you take a point of period dividing n and you sort of plug it in here, it should make this vanish. So this should be divisible by f to the m z minus z for any m dividing n. And just by using Möbius inversion, you can define these factors. And more or less, the points z and c that make this disappear are the quadratic polynomials with a point of actual period d. Right? If you make this vanish, you just have point period maybe dividing d. But more or less, if you make this vanish, you actually have period d. That's not 100% true, but it's 99% true. Okay, so those polynomials obviously, well, not obviously, but they do turn out to have integer coefficients. Okay, so here's a result due to Bush in 1992. Bush is somebody who looked at this from the point of view of complex dynamics, not sort of global dynamics. But Bush proved that each of these two-variable polynomials is geometrically irreducible. So in particular, if we let x1 of n be the smooth projective curve birational to the place where this two-variable polynomial vanishes, x1 of n is always going to be an irreducible curve. And I've adopted this notation, x1 of n, because this is supposed to be the analog, for those of you, again, who know a lot about elliptic curves, this is sort of supposed to be the analog for quadratic polynomials of the modular curve x1 of n, which parameterizes an elliptic curve with a point of order n. This is parameterizing quadratic polynomials with a point of period n. So all of these curves we know are geometrically irreducible. It turns out that the first three of them, for reasons that actually are quite simple if you spend enough time looking at the problem, the first three of them are rational curves. So they have tons of rational points on them. So here's an example. If it's kind of messy, but if you take any rational number t other than 0 or 1, because these things have poles of 0 or 1, and you make z equal to this and c equal to this, then the quadratic polynomial z squared plus c is a point of period 3 starting here. And you can write down even simpler formulas for points of period 1 and 2. This is just from the rational parameterization of x1 of n for these three values. So there are tons of examples of quadratic polynomials over Q with marked points of period 1, 2, or 3. They're easy to construct. There's not much interesting that can be said about them. So here's a conjecture. It's made by Bjorn Poonen. Poonen made his conjecture after looking at a little bit more than just what I've written here, so he's not being too hasty. And the conjecture is just that this is all that you get over the rational numbers, that you don't have periodic points of quadratic polynomials over the rational numbers of period bigger than 3. So what I want to talk about is just a little bit of evidence supporting this conjecture. And I'll talk first about some evidence, some actual sort of mathematical evidence provided by people other than me, and then I'll talk about some sort of numerical evidence provided by me and a co-author. So what evidence is there for this conjecture? Well, first of all, this is very, very weak evidence, but it suggests that you might be on the right track. The genera of these curves, x1 of n in this version of x1 of n, has genus at least 2 if n is at least 4. So the first 3 are rational, but after that they're all general type. So by Salting's theorem, each one of them has only rational, only finitely many rational points. So this is telling you that, it's not really offering any substantial evidence for the conjecture at all. It's just saying that if you have infinitely many counterexamples to Poonen's conjecture, they don't all have the same period. Right? There are only finitely many counterexamples of any given period to Poonen's conjecture. So this isn't any real evidence. This is just telling you that you're not sort of way off base. So here's something that's maybe a little bit more promising. Patrick Morton in 1998 showed that, in fact, what I called Y1 of 4, so Y1 of 4 is the points on X1 of 4 that actually come from actual polynomials rather than just being these points that you get by completing. There are no rational points on this curve. So there are no quadratic polynomials over Q with a point of period 4. The way that Morton showed this is actually kind of interesting. So it turns out that X1 of 4, in my terminology, is actually X1 of 16 in the elliptic curves terminology, which appears to be a complete coincidence. So it just happened that this curve had already been studied elsewhere in the literature. And so that observation was enough to show that there are no non-trivial rational points. Or rather, the rational points were known, so they could be sort of checked. So apparently a year earlier, but I think actually later, so I think these are publication dates. I think the actual chronology is reversed. Flynn, Poonen, and Schaefer showed the same thing for period 5. So there are no examples of period 5. And this was a pretty difficult Chabotais-Coleman-type argument. But it turns out that you can do it, and there are no points of period 5. And so we can sort of march on and look at the next case. So Michael Stoll very recently did the same thing for period 6, but already in this case, computationally, it gets kind of difficult. So Michael Stoll did another sort of Chabotais argument to show that there are no rational points or non-trivial rational points on X1 of 6. But in doing so, right, so you're finding rational points on some curve, and the Jacobian of the curve appears to have rank 3, but the only way that Stoll could actually show that it had rank 3 was to do some L-series computations, assuming the Birch-Swinton and Dyer conjecture. So if you're willing to believe that the Jacobian of the appropriate curve actually has rank 3 over Q, then this is known. There are no period 6 examples. Okay. Now this is obviously a slow march to infinity, right? It's going to be a long time before every single natural number is covered by people doing Chabotais' method. Also, unlike the case with the elliptic modular curves, here there are no obvious maps between any of these parametrizing curves. Right? With an elliptic curve, if you have an elliptic curve with a marked point of order 6, this gives you an elliptic curve with a marked point of order 2 by multiplying that point by 3. But here there are no maps, there are no obvious maps between the parametrizing curves. So there's, the whole framework used to prove Mazur's theorem, there's no real hope of sort of rebuilding that here. But also, just because you know that there are no points of period 6, this doesn't tell you anything about points of period 12. So this is really a case-by-case sort of march that won't end unless somebody can get an upper bound on the periods here. So up until now, There's basically no computational evidence for this conjecture other than the cases that have been proven using computational tools. So the question that I want to look at in the last few minutes is whether or not there's a nice computational way to check the conjecture, or, I mean, build a body of evidence supporting the conjecture. So the idea that I want to take is from elliptic curves. And if you want to find periodic points for multiplication by two map on an elliptic curve, i.e. if you want to find torsion points on the elliptic curve, the best way to do this is to pick one or two primes of good reduction and reduce the curve modulo those primes of good reduction. And there are various theorems that tell you that this reduction map will be injective on torsion. And then you can look at the elliptic curve over a finite field, and it'll tell you something about the torsion globally. So that's the idea that we want to use for quadratic polynomials. But we need the tools that will tell us... Oh, see, I promised at some point I would forget to freeze the previous slide, which I just did, but it wasn't a very important slide. So we need some tools that will tell us, you know, what happens when we reduce modulo p. So here's a lemma that's due to a bunch of people, more or less primarily Mike Zeeves in this form. And the lemma is rather long and complicated, and I realized after writing it that I've used p to denote at least four different things, which is horrible. So this should be taken as a cautionary example of how you should not write up a mathematical statement. But the lemma says that if you have any rational map from p1 of k to p1 of k, where k is a number field, and you have a point of period n, and you suppose that phi has good reduction at some prime of the number field p. So what good reduction means is, it means that this extends to a morphism at the special fiber mod p, but if you prefer, it just means that if you reduce, you know, the equation defining the morphism mod p, nothing terrible happens. You don't get a morphism of lower degree, you don't get poles in the coefficients or anything. So what this says is that if you have a point of period n, and you reduce mod p, and that point of period n becomes a point of period m, then n and m are related in the following way. Either n equals m, so that would be nice, or n equals m times r, I'll tell you what r is in a second, or n equals m times r times the power of p. And the power of p is just bounded in this way. Sorry, p is the characteristic of the residue field, so it's the rational prime above the number field prime, or below the number field prime. So what's r? R is the order of this thing called the multiplier of the cycle in the multiplicative group of the residue field. So if you expand this out with a chain rule, this is just the derivative of phi evaluated at every point in the m cycle. You multiply those all together, and this is a quantity called the multiplier. The multiplier comes up a lot in studying complex holomorphic dynamics. It's a useful invariant, right? For example, the map phi ramifies at some point in the orbit if and only if the multiplier is zero. The multiplier tells you something about the dynamics locally. So if you know the order of the multiplier in the residue field, and you work out this business here, you get only a handful of possibilities. If you take a point of some period and you reduce mod p and you get a point of period m, you only have a handful of possibilities for what the original period was. So this gives an algorithm to check Poonen's conjecture modulo by reducing modulo various primes. So in other words, if C is in Q, so what does good reduction mean, by the way, for quadratic polynomial? It's particularly simple for a quadratic polynomial. You can check the good reduction. The scheme theoretic definition of good reduction corresponds exactly to the prime P not dividing the denominator of C, right? That's the only thing that can go terribly wrong. So given a C in Q and any prime P, you can generate a finite list of possible periods of periodic points just by looking at the different possible periods mod P and then listing them with the previous lemma to get the different possible periods globally. So I don't want to go through this example too closely because I'll run out of time if I do, but here's just one example. For example, if you take a rational number which is congruent to 1 mod 3, right, so the map mod 3 is z squared plus 1. And this is what the dynamics looks like over the field of three elements. There's only one periodic cycle. So if you have a periodic point, other than the point at infinity, which we're leaving out for reasons that can be justified, if you have a periodic point, it has to be 2 mod 3. And if period mod 3 is 1, which, if you apply the previous lemma, tells you that its global period is either 1 or 3. So already we know that if C is congruent to 1 mod 3, this conjecture of Poonen's has to be true. In fact, you can make a few observations. If you look at what's happening mod 2, two-thirds of the possible congruence classes mod 2 actually rule out your quadratic polynomial violating Poonen's conjecture. There are three residue classes mod 2, by the way, because there's C can be 0 mod 2, it can be 1 mod 2. Those are the two examples that support Poonen's conjecture. Or C could be infinity mod 2, in which case this whole method doesn't tell you anything. So it's only when C is infinity mod 2 that Poonen's conjecture has any chance of being violated. Similarly, if you look mod 2 and 3, only 1/6 of residue classes could possibly violate Poonen's conjecture. And finally, if you look modulo the first 10 primes, only this number of residue classes could actually possibly violate Poonen's conjecture. So if you pick a random value C in the rational numbers, you have sort of 1 in 5 million chance that you'll get some value C which isn't, for which Poonen's conjecture isn't guaranteed by local conditions at the first 10 primes. So just to finish, I want to state the main result of this computation. So I have some results over quadratic fields, but I don't have time for those. So let me just end by stating that the result of the computation over Q, and this is work by me and Ben Hutt, using this idea, so doing the pre-computation for the first 10 primes, and then for the remaining congruence classes, for each individual C, we just searched until we found enough primes that ruled out a contradiction to Poonen's conjecture, we showed that if C is a rational number of absolute height at most 10 to the 8. So that is just the maximum of the numerator and the denominator. Then Poonen's conjecture is true. And this wasn't particularly computationally expensive. I mean, this was run on a laptop in like 15 minutes or something. So we could probably boost this up to 10 to the 9 or something, but I don't think it really changes the weight of the computation. So at least for a large number of values of C, this conjecture of Poonen's holds. And I just want to finish by saying the next thing we did after this is we did sort of a similar computation for a similar conjecture over quadratic number fields. And so for quadratic number fields with discriminant in a certain range, we sort of showed that there's no quadratic polynomial with a point of period, in that case greater than 6, which is the corresponding conjecture for quadratic number fields. So I think since I'm out of time, I'll leave it there. Thank you.